Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This is an empowering hour. We're going to talk about grape powder, neuroprotective effects of virgin coconut oil, aerobic activity, vegan diets, uterine fibroid growth, and immune cell mistakes that can cost you. All from peer-reviewed journals, all respected institutions, and nowhere to be found in the mainstream media, unfortunately. For example, from Long Island University comes a study that if you have a scoop of grape powder every day, you can extend your lifespan by up to 5 years. Just that. In fact, the authors were so surprised by this study, they called it, quote, remarkable. Researchers found that giving grape powder to mice reduced the risk of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and extended the lifespan. To see if grape powder could modulate the harmful effects of a high-fat diet, the average American diet, researchers fed mice a typical Western high-fat diet. Half then received a 5% standardized grape powder, while the other half did not. Compared to mice not fed the grape powder, the mice given grape powder saw beneficial increases in antioxidant genes, reductions in fatty liver, and extended lifespans. The lead author estimated that when translated to humans, the extended lifespan would correspond to an additional 5 years in the life of a human. Now, we're not talking about comprehensive change. We're not talking about behavioral change, exercise, different supplements, different anti-aging nutrients. We're talking about one single thing added to the diet, grape powder. How about that? And you've heard me mention many times, always try to get the fresh fruit whenever possible, organic. If you can't get it organic in season, well, you can frequently get it organic frozen. That's good. And then if it's you want to get the grapes and they're not organic, then spray them. Agitate them in water. Empty the water, spray, agitate, empty 3 times. That'll get rid of almost all the surface contaminants on there. But if you can't get the grapes, then use a grape concentrate. That merely means they've wicked out some of the water, anywhere from a third to a half, depending upon the concentrate. That's even better than the fresh, because you're getting more. If that doesn't work, then you go to a grape powder or any kind of powder, because that's the highest concentration of nutrients you can put into your body, because it eliminates what was in the product in the way of fluid, which is different in every single product, but it gives you the full power of a functional food. So, by the way, the grape study used red grapes, green grapes, and black grapes. So that's important. So just something simple. That's simple. Now consider how many tens of millions of Americans now suffer from what can be a lethal condition, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, meaning it didn't come from drinking, and it didn't come from, let's say, hepatitis. So this is the diet. That's a high fructose corn syrup diet that causes that. And this prevents that. Yeah, it modulates hepatic, meaning your liver, gene expression, prevents oxidative damage, and induces fatty acid metabolism, ameliorates NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and increases longevity, even when co-administered a high-fat diet. And I've mentioned this story in the past, and I'm sure some of you have also found this true in your own lives. You have a loved one or a close friend that you don't want to see succumb to their indulgences and overindulgences in bad diet, bad lifestyle. So you try to figure out some way to get them to do something that can modulate some of this negative behavior. I couldn't get anyone in my family to stop smoking. They smoke probably 2 to 3 packs a day. One member, 4 packs a day. He would later die of lung cancer. And then you try to say, okay, they're not going to change their diet. They're not going to change their living habits. They're not going to start exercising, etc. So I would buy some vitamins. And I say, just take this each day. Well, they wouldn't take all the vitamins. Well, can you at least take one vitamin per day? Just one, that's all. And that was vitamin C. And they said yes, but then I came back 6 months later and they hadn't taken any. I'm sure you can appreciate the frustration. It doesn't mean we should stop trying to figure out ways to get someone who's living an unhealthy life that's going to have a not good outcome make some changes. Now, ideally, they'll make far more changes than one single thing. But anything that can put time on their side means that they might get to a place where they change their mind. So here, grape powder. How about that? Now, from Katholieke University in Belgium comes a study about the neuroprotective effect of virgin coconut oil. It helps relieve ALS. Now, there was someone in the news just yesterday, I believe, who is a singer and who said that they can't sing, Roberta Flack, can't sing anymore because they got ALS. I remember when I worked with the first person that I had worked with, his name was Donald Benson. He was just one of the finest human beings I've ever met. I'd known him for about 20 years because he was the editor-in-chief of a major publishing company, and he was one who signed me up to do a whole series of they were factoid books, meaning the theme was fictionalized, but virtually the content was true. And we did a whole series, and they were very successful. And he was also one of America's most respected Western writers. He wrote on the Old West. And one day he shows up at my office, and I notice there's a difference. His hands are trembling, and he says, "Gary, I got ALS rather advanced now. Anything can be done?" I said, "Of course there's things can be done." He said, "Because my prognosis is not good." And I said, "What's the prognosis?" He said, "Well, the best I can expect is about 6 to 7 months based upon the stage. And I've tried everything they've given me, and nothing works. It's made me sick, etc." So I went to work, and we were able to prolong his life almost 2.5 years after that. And then he moved out west, and I didn't communicate with him for a while. I didn't know how he was doing. So pass on the word that today we have some really unique protocols that should be tried. No promises made, but if someone who is well known can reverse a condition that is considered medically irreversible, then that may give some inspiration and hope to people who feel, well, there's nothing to do. Just, you know, get my will made and say goodbye to my friends and family for however long I might have. That's what is happening every single day in the United States to hundreds of thousands of people with different terminal conditions. Just saying, here's one thing. This was an animal study. It looked into the potential of coconut oil in preventing or reducing ALS symptoms. Because coconut oil has already demonstrated it's safe, and it's good for treating Alzheimer's disease symptoms, which is also a neurodegenerative disease for which mainstream medicine has no answer. And when they used 1H magnetic resonance spectroscopy, they found that the ALS treatment diagnostics and research in use, and they had looked at both animal and human studies to isolate minute molecular changes in brain and nervous system studies without having to procure tissue and blood samples. That's called non-invasive. And that's what they found with the coconut oil supplementation. So again, it's one piece of a puzzle. And it enhanced motor performance and it prolonged survival in the SOD1G93A mouse model. And furthermore, the data showed stable metabolic profile at day 120 in the coconut oil group compared to the group receiving a standard diet without coconut oil. In addition, a positive correlation between survival and the neuronal marker NAA was found. And this is the first study that reports metabolic changes in the bloodstream using in vivo MRS and effects of coconut oil supplementation as a prophylactic treatment in this group of mice. And one of the major metabolites is NAA, that's N-acetylaspartate, and it's been observed as an integral part of the neuron loss, which is a major factor in the onset of ALS when it is diminished from the central nervous system. And NAA, that's again N-acetylaspartate, reduction was greater in the non-coconut oil-fed group of rats, indicating those on coconut oil were experiencing less neurodegeneration and neuronal destruction. Now, here is the fine point on this. No matter how many people can be shown through clinical experience to have reversed a disease that is considered medically irreversible, and no matter how open and obvious the outcomes are by replication by other clinicians, no one in orthodox medicine or science will even consider this. And the conditioning is so invasive into the person's psyche that a person would rather die, not voluntarily, but by honoring the traditional belief system, rather than chance being cured, which they don't believe is possible. And they don't believe it's possible using alternative methods because they've been told that's all garbage, there's nothing there. And as just one example, that was Arthur Ashe. There's a really outstanding journalist. His name is Doug Henderson, and he's been an integral voice of reason and investigative journalism in the African-American community. And he brought this gentleman, Arthur Ashe, into my office, and I had all these studies laid out, and I also had all these patients open and saying, yeah, he can see our medical records, he had permission, and talk with him. And he came to a lecture I did in Harlem at the Apollo Theater, came into the office many times, and in fact, one night he spent about 6 hours. He was there at 6 in the evening, and that's when we started treatment with the people with AIDS, because they all wanted to do it together, and we wanted to have the whole center so about 48 people could get treated at the same time. And he was there until we closed. And yet, he never tried the therapy. He never engaged. Why? And I spoke with Doug about 2 weeks before Arthur passed. I said, he's going to pass very shortly. I mean, time's running out. You know, he has a chance, but what's wrong, Doug? What do you know that I don't? He's seen the documentation on each part of the protocol. He has interviewed dozens of people who had full-blown AIDS, near death, and are now completely healthy. 3 of those people reversed HIV entirely and come in and volunteer because their lives were saved, so they're donating time to be an encouraging factor with the support group. And he said, he's got it in his mind that no matter what you show him and the patient show him and the medical staff here, 22 medical staff show, he's believing the people in his life who tell him, that won't work. What's he got to lose? What does anyone have to lose when they're at the end of their life, there's no help? Why not try something? But that's how powerful orthodox is. That's how powerful conditioned program response is into our psyche. And then you could take that same response and apply it to almost everything else you do in life. What kind of career you go into, how you vote, all that is in the programming, less in the conscious awareness of what's happening in the moment and who would be the best person with the best policies to help everyone. Because if that were the case, I can assure you almost no one who voted for in the last 50 years would be in office. There'd be a whole different group of people. But here, let me just throw this out as a aside. In a world that is substantially influenced by one person, at least publicly, we don't know all the people behind the scenes, and we don't know what impact they have upon them, but let's just say, for argument's sake, that the most powerful person in the world, as far as public opinion on domestic and foreign policy, would be the President of the United States. Wouldn't you assume with all the very brilliant human beings on this planet, and especially in the United States, people who have shown throughout their lifetime people in all the different fields a commitment to higher ideals and not partisan politics, not identity politics, not woke politics, that we could find a real good field to select. So it wouldn't matter whether you're left or right. That's immaterial. That's child's play. That's just stupid to think that that matters. It does not matter. And because the people who control everything are just looking at this saying, my God, these people are so dumb. Look at them. They actually believe that that vote counts. It doesn't in the world we live in. It should. One vote, one person. That's true if you had no politics that was based upon who gave the money. So if George Soros gives enough money, he buys the politic. Then they lie to the public. Then they get elected. So it wasn't one person, one vote, and it has been a long time. So name me one person. Here's a question. Call in, and I'd like to hear your answer. 888-874-4888. Name me one person who came into office, even was got 1% of the vote, that was a person of spiritual integrity, did not lie, did not manipulate, and looked after everyone's interest, not just those in the dominant party. Can you name such a person in all of American history? Name me that president, all right? Because I haven't found one. In fact, here's the sad reality, and this is a reflection of the people in this audience and around the world. We can't and should not always blame the people in power for how they abuse that power at some point and to the degree they abuse it. We put them there. At what point do we stop putting all the wrong people in positions of power? And the answer is, we can't stop. Because it would deny the reality of how we're conditioned, and especially young people now, where do you think they get the reality? Their reality is not the reality that my parents and my parents' parents, grandparents all grew up with and we grew up with, where you develop a sense of the real world and how to be a part of it in a cooperative way. No, no, it's a different, it's an altered reality. Everything's based upon illusion and deception on the internet. But if that's your primary source of information, then it's not too difficult to figure out. Your perception becomes your reality, which has nothing to do with the real world until there's a crisis. Only when there's a crisis, when everything you believed in is shattered, and it will be, then are you faced with the reality. When I see all the people up and down the beaches everywhere in America, from the beaches of Long Beach in California and right here in Southwest Florida, over on the East Coast, and not a single person really prepares. No one does anything. It makes sense. The state doesn't do anything. Hurricane Sandy, did you see, you know, 20 million gallons of water being brought in before Sandy? No. Did you see commercial generation to keep whole buildings operational? No. Did you see food brought in? No. Did you see anything done? You never do. Go to Home Depot and buy some plywood, and that's about the best you can expect. But we're going to tough it out. Tough it out? You're tougher than 154-mile-an-hour wind? You're tougher than a 9-foot surge? And you're right on the beach, or you're within 5 blocks of the beach, which means within a mile of the beach, you're going to get flooded? But you didn't do anything about your furniture, putting it up on the second floor, or entering a trailer and driving out of harm's way? No, that would actually mean that you were not conditioned in this mindset. It's the mindset that we're conditioned with that allows us to make the mistakes, but never take control of the mistake. It'll get better. It, friends, does not exist. You exist and your capacity to make choices. But what if you're always making a choice from a conditioned mindset? So just remember, at no time in 15 years did a single person from any governmental agency or any National Institute of Health or any independent laboratories or physicians in general come by the Tri-State Healing Center, because every single condition that medicine said could not be reversed were reversed daily. AIDS, end-stage cancers. In fact, I held and filmed. Thank goodness I filmed it, because you bet I'm going to show that the moment someone says, well, you couldn't do this. I did it. Have you done it? Do you have proof you've done it? I did it. I've reversed all these conditions. You can't. But would you? Where's your ego, buddy, when you can't come in? A million doctors and they can't come in to see what's being done because their ego won't allow them to, their belief system won't allow them to. Just sharing that with you, for those of you who are still optimistic about something changing in any part of our lives. It isn't. Until that day comes when all your illusions, no matter where those illusions came from, are shattered and you have to face the real world. Then there's only one truth, and that's the truth in front of you. And then you see the rightness or wrongness of all your choices. Just ask anybody that's ever jumped off a 100-story building. They feel nothing until the pavement. And that's where we're at every level of our society today. From Tel Aviv University comes a study about aerobic activity can reduce the risk of metastatic cancer by 72%. Wow. That is terrific. Intensity aerobic exercise increases the glucose consumption of internal organs, thereby reducing the availability of energy to the tumor. And that was at the Tel Aviv University Faculty of Medicine. So, exercise and help prevent metastatic cancers. From University of South Carolina comes a study about vegan diets are best for weight loss, even with carbohydrate consumption. This is brand new, and that's a good study. One more on the plant-based diet. And also from Northwestern University comes a study about uterine fibroid growth activated by chemicals found in everyday products. We've been talking about these phthalates, the toxic chemicals found in soap and shampoos and hair dyes. Those increase the growth of uterine fibroids, the most common tumors among women. And the manufacturers know that their products are toxic, but they sell them anyhow. So try to go all natural. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 23 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. Come right back. Please stay with us. And of all the things I'm going to play today, I'd like for you to call in and share your point of view. We're going to start in Studio New York. We're going to number 3. Here's why no one trusts CNN. And you got to watch this. And because if you see it, it makes a lot more sense. If you, and again, let me explain how you watch something. You go to prn.live, click on shows, then click on all show archives. You'll see there Gary and all show notes. That then shows you the video that we're playing. But again, which was the network was most responsible for being a propaganda arm of the government and the deep state? It was CNN. Which one gave us the worst information and was most polarizing? It was CNN. Which one is an embarrassment? It's CNN. Here's why.
This brand new research by Gallup says American trust in the mass media is at its lowest point since 2016 and near a record low overall.
Jeff Zucker has announced his immediate resignation as the president of CNN. This comes amid an investigation into what Jeff Zucker calls a consensual relationship.
What happened and where CNN goes from here?
You were caught masturbating on camera. You since then have been on leave from CNN. Do I have all that right?
You got it all right. Sad to say.
The biggest media story this weekend, it's the firing of Chris Cuomo from this network, CNN. Late Wednesday, a lawyer contacted CNN with a sexual misconduct complaint about Cuomo.
Joining me now, the man who accused Don Lemon of sexual assault. His accuser claims Lemon started rubbing himself.
But the even bigger point, I think, is about what the press is. Is it produced by reporters or by repeaters? Repeaters are the talk radio shouters. They're on TV and radio telling the same story every day.
Donald Trump.
The same story every day.
Repeaters are Twitter trolls who anonymously amplify propaganda and try to wear the rest of us down with their repetition.
January 6th.
Repetition.
repetition.
So much of what they are repeating is from reporters, from the people paid to figure out what is true.
A widely held conspiracy theory that the coronavirus was created in a Chinese laboratory.
Dr. Fauci, thank you for keeping it straight. Thank you for fighting the good fight.
We know the science. We know that masks work.
What we have now is a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
This is really now a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
This is now a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
This is now a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
This is now a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Much of the dossier has been corroborated.
What does Putin have on Trump? Has Trump been compromised?
But it does look like that young man to me is taunting the Native American Vietnam vet, and he's in his face.
There is no evidence of any wrongdoing by either Hunter or Joe Biden.
There's no evidence of wrongdoing by either Joe or Hunter Biden.
What you're seeing behind me is one of multiple locations that have been burning in Kenosha.
But this isn't about ideology.
The biggest terror threat in this country comes from radicals on the far right, primarily white men.
As a white woman aware of my own privilege in this country, I am so angry, and I can't even begin.
Now, too many see the protests as the problem. No, the problem is what forced your fellow citizens to take to the streets.
A few moments later.
We're here inside CNN Center.
Taping.
We just threw something on fire, Chris.
Yep.
Something's on fire.
Nick, you all right?
We're getting out of here, Chris.
All right.
We are not fake news. We are real news.
And now the two faces of Hillary Clinton are coming out. The fact, through WikiLeaks, that she says one thing and...
Oh, no. All right, let's see if we can get Congressman Collins back. Obviously, we just lost the satellite feed. That sucks.
Routinely at these rallies, we are hearing a chants of CNN sucks.
This is CNN, the most trusted name in the world.
CNN sucks, man.
Yeah, it does. Oh, and how clever was that moment when you had... Chris Cuomo talking about, now these are legitimate people in the streets and that they're protesting, right? Until they burn down the building of CNN and there's Chris Cuomo having, and the staff running out. They didn't cover that part. No, it's all lies. But that's only part of the situation. Right now, and it really doesn't matter to me, I don't get into the whole who you voted for, that's immaterial to me because I know what the real game plan is and I see who's controlling everything. And you would like to think the average person just believes that there's going to be a better world for all of us unless you intentionally want, I only want someone who will be for me and against everyone else. Okay, because that's what you got. But then are you asking yourself, why wouldn't I want the same rights upheld, the same freedoms to be expressed by all Americans? I can disagree with them, but that doesn't mean that they should be punished because they're a different party, left or right. Doesn't matter. Happens on both sides. This is important because if we had real, honest, real progressive, not these phony progressives we have, but real progressives, they would want to change everything. What have I said for decades? Get rid of all money in politics. Not a single penny can go into a political campaign. No lobbyist in campaigns. Let the citizens see people as they are. Let them be challenged in debates from the people. And then have them in a lottery go up against each other until such time that you end up with the people that you feel really represent your interest and are not career politicians or coming from corporate interest to represent the corporation in a position of power, which happens all the time. Judy Gerberding, head of the CDC, who was there when the great scandal that has never been discussed in the media, not a word in the media, where Dr. Thompson oversaw the cheating and and by the way, a federal crime, confiscating records of a study on the MMR vaccine on young African-American children, young males, 36 months and younger, with a 225% increase in autism spectrum disorder. And they destroy all the records. That no longer protects them from what would be a normal protection under you can't sue them because they're a federal employee. She then went from there to Pfizer became or one of the vaccine companies and ended up making millions and millions of dollars. You can't have a revolving door. You can't have someone coming from industry into the government or going from the government into industry. It should be outlawed. When was the last time you heard anyone talking about this? Well, now there's a small group, and it's a small group, but they're saying something similar to that. It's not that I agree or disagree on other points of view with these people, but here's one of those people calling it out, and the media wouldn't touch this. And I think you'll understand why when you hear what he has to say. Let's go to number five, Justin.
All of our witnesses, and so I would remind the members as you go, 5 minutes. We have the clock over here, so you can see it. And we're going to start with the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Gates.
Mr. Meadows tells us that four votes control this town. Well, depending on how some counting goes out in California, four votes may control the House of Representatives and may be quite dispositive, and that four-vote power might be substantially democratized. If the American people get one thing from this forum, it is that the broken rules of the House of Representatives are not a bug of the system. They are a feature of the system. We have built something that is purposefully mystified so that corrupt, bad decisions do not get exposed and so that members of Congress aren't held accountable when they vote for bad things. And there is a community of common fate that continues to allow that to persist. The principal critique that almost every member of Congress has about this place is that you get to a point where ultimately you feel like your vote doesn't matter. Your vote's controlled by the leadership. What is your one vote going to do? Well, now, with the opportunity we've been given with a very slim majority, everyone's vote matters to a far greater degree than at any other time during the public service of the people currently sitting on this dais. I will confess I'm not a member of the Freedom Caucus. I did not have a role in developing these rules. I don't agree with all of them. I am a proponent of proxy voting. I believe that sending the members out into their communities more often makes things harder for lobbyists. What if instead of just sitting at the Capitol Hill Club and buying people's votes and signatures on letter, $1,000, $5,000 at a time, these lobbyists actually had to get on regional jets and go to like Northwest Arkansas and Southern Mississippi and go lobby members of Congress? I think it would be terrific. Check out my essay in the Washington Examiner on that point. I would also observe that there are several things that I think we should actually work with Democrats on to change the rules. And let me outline some of those. I believe that no member of Congress, by House rule, should be allowed to accept a donation for their campaign from a federal lobbyist or a federal political action committee. That money all has strings attached to it, and anybody who tries to tell you otherwise is lying. And when members take hundreds of thousands of dollars from lobbyists and PACs, they work for them more than they work for their constituents. And guess what? I intend to offer that amendment on the House floor in January, and I already have Democrats ready to vote for it, maybe even all of them. The second thing I would suggest is that if someone is a member of Congress, they should be prohibited from lobbying for life. Why is it so hard to say that you should choose one side or the other to be on? You're either in the law-making game or you're in the influence-peddling game. And those who choose to be in the influence-peddling game, go ahead, but you should sacrifice that when you get the privilege to represent 750,000 people. I intend to offer that amendment on January 3rd, and I expect that there will be Democrats voting for it. I will also introduce an amendment to have a ban on members of Congress trading individual stocks. How can we say that that is not something that dilutes our trust in markets and in governance when people are essentially able to bet on the outcomes that they have an ability to somewhat control? And I expect Democrats to vote for that. And finally, I would observe something that has really worked well in the state of Florida, a single subject rule. A bill coming to the floor should only deal with one subject. I was incensed as a freshman when I had to vote on the farm bill and whether or not to authorize war in Yemen in the same vote. And we could still have broad bills that relate to insurance or education or appropriations, but the notion that we lash all these things together does not serve our constituents and the American people. And I would expect, if we're in the majority, Democrats will vote for my amendment for a single subject rule. There is a vote, as Mr. Meadows said, coming up in the next 48 hours regarding.
Okay, you can agree or disagree on him, his record, but what we need is we need Mr. Smith goes to Washington. We need Jimmy Stewart in real to go to Washington and not compromise to the old club where all the lobbyists, and being on PFW for 36 years every day, I had a chance to meet hundreds of people from the Washington political establishment after my lectures, and they'd show up and want to share stuff with me. And they all said that it's corrupt, top to bottom. The very first day in office, you're besieged with invitations to fundraising dinners and breakfast forums with people who just load up your bank account with lots of money. But they also come with, as he said, strings attached. Why don't we ban all lobbying? All right, let the legislators and their staff find the issues that the American public say are important to them and work collectively together on them, not opposite. It's everything we do in Washington is wrong, everything. So we need reform at every level. By the way, I wanted you to hear what Jimmy Dore, and I'm playing this clip because I know a lot of celebrities. I've counseled a lot, thousands. I never mention their names, ever. But in this case, Tim Robbins, who was part of the couple of Susan Sarandon, I do know. And I worked with Susan and him years ago. And he impressed me as a person who was very interested in social causes. In fact, many of the things he did, including putting on a play downtown, anti-war, he was on the right side of a lot of issues. But on one issue, he was not. You know, if you didn't get vaccinated, you were condemned. But he did something that is so rare that I just want to compliment Tim Robbins on having the integrity to say, I was wrong. And when I understand how damaging being wrong is, and now I want to see other people within the entertainment community take an honest look at what we've been doing, condemning people who didn't get vaccinated. And so the whole intelligence community, the corporate community, the entertainment community all condemned those who were unvaccinated, no matter why a person chose not to be vaccinated. Maybe they already had the virus, knew that natural immunity was good, and to put a vaccine on top of natural immunity could actually hurt a person. Or maybe they had a condition that didn't allow them to get vaccinated. Nobody cared. If you didn't get vaccinated, you were evil. And we created vaccine apartheid in the United States. And that was wrong. Here's Jimmy Dore addressing it.
Now, this is another story that piggybacks on that story, where the New York State Supreme Court just said all the fired unvaccinated workers should be rehired and given back pay because it was unlawful to fire unvaccinated workers. That's happening. That was New York Supreme Court. And now Tim Robbins, the actor, former lover of Susan Sarandon, I don't think they ever got married, but a partner. Partner sounds like they were gay together, but they weren't.
Yeah.
Maybe they were. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know what's underneath that tie. Tim Robbins and the Lost Art of Finding Common Ground. And it says, the star of films like The Player and Bull Durham opens up about two tough years of pandemic politics and worries society is purposely phasing out the common meeting space.
You don't have to worry. It's happening.
It did. It happened. Like,
what are you worried about, our democracy as well?
So here he tweeted this out. When did he tweet this out? October 30th, 2021. He tweets out a video of people protesting vaccine passports in London.
Oh, I know where this is going.
He said it's not a left or right thing here, meaning in England. He tweets it out, and then he says, easy now, folks. I am not anti-vax. It's not going to help you. If you tell one truth about the vax or COVID policy, you are immediately called anti-vax. Just get ready. So he said, I am not anti-vax. I am against passports that exclude people from society for a choice they make, whether that is for medical, religious, or political reasons. A two-tiered society is not a free society. We need more empathy and tolerance for those we disagree with. Now, he said that in October of 2021. So tip of the hat to Tim Robbins being out in front. He was wrong on it for a while. In fact, he'll admit it here. He says, First he says, hey, SAG-AFTRA and Actors Equity, it's way past our time to end your discriminatory policies. The New York Supreme Court just ruled that all unvaccinated New York City employees are reinstated to their full employment and are entitled to back pay and salary from the date of termination. And then he says, being vaccinated does not prevent an individual from contracting or transmitting the COVID-19. As of the day of this decision, the CDC guidelines regarding quarantines and isolation are the same for vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals. And that's from the Honorable Ralph J. Porzio.
Not us.
So that's Tim Robbins coming down on the right side of this issue. So tip of the hat is the only person in Hollywood I've seen come down. I don't know. Maybe Susan Sarandon is on the right side of this, but I haven't seen it. If she is, it would be helpful. I doubt it. So this is from the article by Matt Taibbi. He says, in part, this is because the entertainment business remains mired in high vigilance mode when it comes to pandemic restrictions, with an omerta having still hovering over vaccine-related questions. Robbins himself was with the program early, which he now seems to regret. I was guilty of everything that I came to understand was not healthy. I demonized people. So this is him. This is big deal. He's doing this. I think this shows a lot of character. However, he soon began to wonder why certain rules were being kept long after they lost real-world utility. For instance, deals struck in 2021 between studios and powerful unions like SAG-AFTRA, the Directors Guild of America, and Actors Equity barred the unvaccinated not just from working, but from auditioning. This made possible, made sense when the vaccines were thought to prevent transmission, but now? I get it. I understand the fear. I was there, Robin says, but we've restricted people from working for too long. Now, I have to say the YouTube science is that the vaccine does slow transmission and contraction and is safe and effective and keeps you from getting seriously ill or hospitalized or death. And that's the YouTube science. But he's saying what the Pfizer executive said in front of the European Union, that they didn't even test their vaccine to see if it did stop transmission. They didn't even test it. So
down the rabbit hole of seeing the thing they said.
And so they were concealing that information, which means they were lying to us, and we were instituting mandates on false information. And so now I get it. I understand the fear. I was there, Robin says, but we've restricted people from working for too long. Mostly he's warning about a didactic meanness he senses creeping into both politics and art. So there were no bigger COVID in the world than the people in the arts. The people in theater, the people in film, the people on Broadway. There were no bigger authoritarian Nazis that when it came to COVID than the people in the arts, and they weren't following the science, and they were doing it because they thought they owned the Trumpers, because they see Trumpers as existential threats to them because of their liberal policies around.
Okay, so he is the first. Let's see what other celebrities in different fields who were adamant that if you weren't vaccinated, you were the problem. Let's see if anyone else does a mea culpa. Thank you, Tim Robbins, for having the courage to stand up and turn around and face your own shortcomings and then ask others to do the same. Now we're going to go to Neil Oliver, clip number 6. He asks, why should you, the people in this audience, the people worldwide, why should you be expected to give a complete exoneration of all crimes against humanity, where over 8 million people died, more, and in America, at least 900,000 died, who didn't have to? Early treatments would have worked, saved those lives, where we were lied to at every single junction. And yet, all those crimes now are supposed to be wiped away. That's what The Atlantic is suggesting. And yet, we're in South Africa, They had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Argentina. They had the same type of commission. Other countries, they've had the same commission. We'll forgive you, but you've got to tell us everything, every single thing that you hid, everything you knew and lied about. Then we'll forgive you. They want forgiveness without revealing anything. And they believe they'll get away with it. That's how programmed, that's how collective in mindset they believe that the world population is. What are your thoughts on that? Here is Neil Oliver, one of the most reasonable people that I have found to discuss such an issue. It's a short clip, but he makes some very important points about should we just forgive everything about COVID mistakes.
Neil Oliver, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? And social media giants are still trying to stop clips like that going viral. But how can those on the receiving end of such censorship possibly be asked to forgive and forget? What's your view on this COVID amnesty?
Well, it's an attempted sleight of hand, Dan. It's a transparent attempt to have the rest of us, those upon whom it was inflicted, admit or accept somehow that what they did to us was okay. And it's interestingly, I think it's as close as we've got so far to the other side admitting that they were wrong. The thing is, though, amnesties follow horrendous crimes. You know, when there's a school shooting, there's a call for a gun amnesty. You know, after the Rwandan genocide, there was Truth and Reconciliation, and then there was an amnesty to put things behind. So it's an admission that something went terribly wrong. However, they've got it back to front. The perpetrators of the wrong, the perpetrators of the crime, don't get to call for the amnesty. If there was to be an amnesty, it would be offered by the wronged party, who had decided that they were ready to forgive. Now, as far as things have gone, there has not been any admission of culpability. No. There's been no apology. There's been no admission of anything that was wrong. That fantastic little montage, and you could have played that for a day clips
it went on of
the horror that was inflicted. Yeah. And you know, on a more personal level, you know, when the lockdown meant that we got no furlough. The mainstream of my work just ceased to exist. You know, my wife and I had to work out pretty damn quick how we were going to, you know, continue to earn a living and pay the mortgage. And that was true for uncounted thousands, millions of people all around the world who were just cut out by all of this. And at the same time, for asking questions, we were demonised, ridiculed. The possibility of mandatory vaccines hung over everybody's head like a sword of Damocles and had to be fought off constantly by the likes of you, the likes of me. And the temerity that the people that were pushing that, that made those things happen, that you just showed in that clip, the people that made that happen are now saying that they want an amnesty. Well, for a big start off, how about an apology and an admission that they did was unforgivable?
Well, indeed, because we have folk like, let's use the example of Piers Morgan, Neil, who say, oh, the facts have changed. But I'm sorry, the facts have not changed. You and I were privy to exactly the same information as hysterics on other broadcasters, and we looked at those facts, we spoke to the right experts. I don't believe the facts have changed at all, actually. All that's changed is that the public are no longer buying into the fear porn that was shoved down their throat for 2 years.
You mentioned Piers Morgan. You know, the likes of Piers Morgan, the likes of Susanna Reedy's sidekick, the likes of Andrew Neil, they jumped on a bandwagon. What happened there was those people weren't changed. They weren't responding to facts. What happened there was their inner character was revealed. Those were petty totalitarians who jumped on the opportunity once they had seen a minority of the population set aside and segregated. And as has happened throughout history, you then find out who it is that wants to jump out with the uniforms on and vilify and take part in the demonisation of that vulnerable minority. Those people weren't changed by what happened. They were exposed for what they truly are. And now that it's turning on them, they can sense a change in the wind. And what they're trying to do is rewrite history, reverse engineer what went on to make things, to make it look as though they were only doing their best. And, you know, people saying that they were only doing their duty and they were only doing what they thought was right, that's an excuse that doesn't carry any water when millions of people around the world have either lost their lives, lost their livelihoods, lost everything. You don't just get to sit up and say, oh, well, I was only doing my best and I was only responding to the facts as I understood them. Any possibility of moving forward starts with people standing up and saying, I behaved unforgivably. I did inexcusable things and I can only throw myself on the mercy of those that, you know, that I'm now seeking forgiveness from. And unless and until that...
That's Neil Oliver. We're going to round up today's show with the following. If you had a chance to watch the videos on GaryNall.com on my UN speech, where I was a keynote speaker at the UN on the environment, I had a choice. And I thought about it before I went up to speak, and the whole room, standing room only, environmental groups. And I just decided that I was going to show a mirror to them. How can you call yourself an environmental organization when you're accepting money from some of the leading fossil fuel polluters and therefore don't deem acidification of the ocean, which will cause a plankton imbalance, which causes the sea life that resides on that to go extinct, and all the other things that we do? It depends upon who gives you money, how much money they give you, and what influence they then have over what you're doing as an environmental organization. So I said the entire environmental movement has been corrupted, and I no longer believe in it. But now that there's a group of people in Washington who've just gotten unlimited amounts of money to so-called the new greening, and then when you start looking at these people, none of them are environmentalists, none of them are scientists, none of them have any background in doing environmental work at all, ever, then you start, then what are they going to spend the money on? Then you start seeing it's all about solar and all about wind, and companies that the money will go to, like the Al Gore hedge fund worth billions, and you start thinking, my God, can't people see this is not the right approach? And I've said it many times, I would never buy an electric vehicle because I know all of the minerals that are taken out of the earth are finite minerals that can't be replaced. I know the pollution and CO2 emissions that will come from making a single windmill, a single solar panel or electric car, and that it can never live long enough in the environment to pay back what it cost. We're living with an illusion. But there are ways we could. We could put our money and time into wave power, into wave power of all of our Great Lakes and the oceans, Gulf of Mexico, and that's free, and it's non-polluting, 100% non-polluting. And then geothermal is another one. But most importantly, if you're ever going to stop global degradation, global pollution, global exploitation of finite resources, you're going to have to convince, if possible, the world public to stop consuming all the crap that it consumes. You're going to have a different model instead of a gross domestic product model, to use what Nepal does, a gross happiness model. But once you've been conditioned by the internet and the advertisers and the promoters, how likely is that to occur? So that's how you change the environment. Individuals awakening and seeing that they are contributing to the problem, each one. And when they change, and they start to change in mass, when you hit critical tipping point at 15%, then we're ahead of the situation. But we're not doing that. Here's just one example of how the Green New Deal's bad science, and it is corrupt bad science, is causing these problems. We'll go to it. We won't do the whole clip. And for BAI, we want to say goodbye. You're going to go to the news, but for everyone else, keep listening. And by the way, tonight at 7 o'clock, wow, Ed Dowd. We did a 20-minute interview the other day. Now we're doing a 55-minute interview tonight about all these excess deaths. The numbers are staggering. And yet the administration will not acknowledge any of these excess deaths, over a million, are due to the vaccine And yet there's no other contributing factor that they can find when you start hearing all the scientists talk about it's all in the actuary numbers. That'll be tonight, 7 o'clock. You won't want to miss that. Now go to prn.live to listen to this clip.
Gary, what clip are we going to real quick?
This is the, we're going now to clip number 4.
Which would be?
The Green New Deal's bad science.
Okay, got it.
This, to me, is an existential crisis.
The green generation has risen up.
You're talking about zero.
We'll go about 6 minutes.
No use of fossil fuels.
That is the goal.
That's a goal you could only imagine possible if you have no idea how the energy economy works or how energy is produced in this country.
James Miggs, former editor of Popular Mechanics, says the Green New Deal is just not feasible.
Renewable is especially hard because it's so inconsistent.
Because the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine.
You can't just put in wind turbines and solar panels. You also have to build all this infrastructure to connect them with energy consumers, possibly very far away. And you always need some kind of backup power.
That means many more transmission lines and bigger batteries to store more energy.
You're gonna have to mine all these materials for the batteries, and those mines are environmentally hazardous. Disposing of batteries is hazardous. Batteries are a lousy way to store energy.
Physicist Mark Mills says the ingredients to green energy, like battery packs, are anything but green.
You have to consume 100 barrels of oil's worth of energy in China to make that battery pack. But I have to dig up 1,000 pounds of stuff and process it. Digging up is done with oil, by the way, big machines. So we're consuming energy to, quote, save energy. It's not a good path to go.
He calls the so-called new energy economy magical thinking. Wind and solar and batteries now are 10 times better than they were.
And then they stop getting better because they hit physics limits. You have to believe in kind of magical materials to get 10 times better again. In comic books, we have that.
I can fly.
Tony Stark has that magic power source, can do things that are unimaginable today, but we know that the physics make it impossible to make solar 10 times better again.
We should also make sure we're spending money on stuff that really works. And right now, we're doubling down on technologies like wind and solar that have their place, but they're not going to get the job done by themselves. But that's where all the money's going.
Solyndra was granted a $34.5 million subsidy.
Billions in subsidies. But solar still makes up less than 1% of America's energy, and wind just 2%. And none of that energy is really clean.
We use billions of tons of hydrocarbons to make the number of windmills that are already in the world, and we've only just begun to make them at the level people claim they would like to have them built. If you pursue a path of wind, solar, and batteries, we increase how much we dig up and move by 100 to 1,000 fold. There's a magical thinking that there's somehow free lunch. If I pick this energy source, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't emit anything. It doesn't consume anything. This is in comic book land. Every energy source of energy, every kind, uses land and uses materials to make the technology and always uses hydrocarbon along the way.
Of course, we don't see that when we look at, say, wind turbines. They're beautiful, the gleaming blades.
They take enormous amounts of land. You gotta clear cut the forest. These machines kill a lot of birds. I agree that we should bring down our carbon emissions. There's the global warming risk. There's also the risk that the oceans become more acidic and start killing off the plankton. But we should also make sure we're spending money on stuff that really works.
Why are we making electric cars?
Are electric cars what really works?
Electric cars are great for the environment.
If we just switch to electric cars, we'd use less fossil fuels.
How do you make electricity?
Coal and natural gas.
Yeah,
fossil fuels.
Yeah, exactly.
Many electric car buyers don't realize that most of America's electricity comes from coal and natural gas. People think they're doing something wonderful buying a Prius.
They're basically burning coal and natural gas from the shale fields.
But electric cars will get a lot better.
Sure they will. That'll make the windmills a little better and they'll get cheaper. Solar arrays will get cheaper. The problem isn't that it'll get a little better. A little better is not enough. They can never get 10 times better.
But there is one energy source that produces lots of power with no carbon emissions, nuclear power.
Nuclear is the best answer we have right now. These plants have been around since the 1960s. They work well. They're safe.
There has been an explosion at the Fukushima nuclear power plant.
Safe? Fukushima helps prove how safe nuclear power really is. No one was killed.
People were killed during the evacuation.
The fear of radiation is what killed people. They evacuated a lot of older people out of nursing homes and apartments that really didn't need to go.
One of the atomic reactors at the Chernobyl atomic power plant near the city of Kiev was damaged.
Chernobyl was worse.
We don't truly know exactly how many people died from radiation as a result of Chernobyl.
The plant design was idiotically bad.
Reporters said thousands of people living near Chernobyl would die.
It is not considered fit for human habitation. Thousands of cancer deaths.
She's wrong about that. The rates of thyroid cancer did go up, but nothing, not even remotely in the range of what was forecast. Those radiation limits are set extremely conservatively.
But the word nuclear frightens politicians.
Okay,
there are just 50 people standing between.
Okay, again. If we're interested in the environment, first ask what in your own lifestyle is contributing to the plastic in the ocean, which is causing millions, hundreds of millions of aquatic life to die, from turtles to porpoises to fish. What in our lifestyle is causing virgin rainforest to be decimated? We want the quick fix to everything. We lack critical thinking, we lack patience, we lack discipline, we lack purpose. We want change, but we don't want to be it. And it's only when we, the people of this planet, begin to look at our lifestyles as being overindulgent, just stuffing too much stuff into our mouth, into our brain, and into our lifestyle. How much of it do we really need? And are what we taking in what we really need? Well, we've got junk thinking, junk colleges, junk conversations, and junk food. All that contributes to what we need most. We need right now a society where people can begin to think on their own, act on their own, and then join collectively for the common good of all people. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day. I'm Gary Nall.